I'm sitting with Augusto Machado in his apartment in New York City on December 5th, 2016. This is session 3 of 3 for the Actors Fund. Thank you for talking with me.
Oh, I'm so pleased that you came and that I've been rallying my thoughts and things previously, and I'd like to clear up something because I know that I had said that John Vaccaro's Playhouse, The Ridiculous, had pushed boundaries along with Ronceville and so forth, is that I know I said that 20 years later, Saturday Night Live happens, but it really wasn't 20 years. It was less than 10. But the part of downtown Absurd Ridiculous was spoken about and talked about is addressing very things like The Little Mac Baby or people being arrested in subway restrooms, but that downtown freedom that eventually floated uptown, it's like street theater, street queens, pre-Stonewall, is information, because if we didn't have apartments and phones, how do you share information? Then later in Gay Lib, you're given a list and it's a phone tree. Does anyone know how to do a rotary dial? And you do 12 and people go on. But in this new fabulous age of instant is that you press one thing and globally it's shared. I'm still trying to understand Facebook, but that won't bother me. My feeling about it is when they perfect these gadgets, like I know some cell phones explode or caught fire. So that's another excuse to wait another 10 years. But this thing called Siri and it starts with an A, Avika. Oh, who's the other woman that you can, this gadget, you say, oh, play this music or what? But in any case, that's it. Now, that was the main point because I thought that younger people, when I said 20 years, that's two decades, is that they were there early being provocative and addressing the absurdity of downtown life. And it's not the economic segregation of now. It was that people could move downtown and because the rents were so cheap, and when after 3 months you didn't pay your rent, you moved to another one, which an apartment is like under $50, and there was turnover and movement. And when you read about Patti Smith or Bob Dylan or generations of people unknown who move on to life, is that they partook in the New York experience as different than the weekend hippies or so forth who came in. But that's not a put down, is that exploration of life when you're young is a lot of people can't come into the city more than that Saturday or Sunday, and you came with a friend and you partook and you absorbed like a sponge what you saw and the idea of freedom. You wear this, you can let your hair grow long, you can do this, and you can smoke grass on the street in the East Village, and you can hang out and so forth and so on. But the boundaries that were broken during this 60s, 70 period, reiterating the convergence of anti-war, anti-discrimination, the Black Power movement, and this sexual revolution was happening on its own. And of course, the drug experience. So conversely, some academics try to isolate it. So, but it was a youthquake explosion of all experience. And the last bloom, what would be continued? I think from my point of view, the 80s East Village was the last bloom of anti-establishment, what have you, because real estate and construction started taking over. But what all the young people have to contend with today, meaning economics and so forth, is something several of the generations that preceded me and so forth dealt with. And when you say you were poor then, it was you were struggling, but you could still pay the rent. And as artists downtown, is you took one or two part-time jobs. You can waitress for a while, you can do various things. But the majority of the time, because rent was so cheap, you can devote to your interest, which leads into your art. And everything was so cheap downtown. You saw music, dance, underground films, and of course, all types of alternative theater.
Has your involvement with the city shifted over the time you've been here?
Economics is, I count my blessings, and I know in January I really have to address a situation. I can't be an ostrich because beside behind in the rent and so forth is at my age and money is that I'm not skilled to do something that would pay very much, and that hopefully I think in January I will ask maybe the Actors Fund is if they can help me segue into getting Social Security. And each day is a gift. I meditate, and I count my blessings because my peer group, a little older and a little younger, have health issues, or day-to-day living, groceries, laundry, robbing, and trying to look at bills and decide, do we rob Peter to pay Paul? And maybe, with my generation, we still use the telephone. Most people culturally now don't have time to talk to a person. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm disturbing you. I meant to talk to your machine. But in younger years, you just move your thumbs and you text and shorthand, and you communicate such fabulous information. Now, I went to see yesterday Blood Wedding at the Clemente Soto place, performance base, on Suffolk Street. And my neighbor, Theodore Skipitoris, who blends theater, multimedia, interdisciplinary, puppetry and so forth. She with a class from Lang did Blood Wedding. And I thought, gee whiz, there's an alternative spaces are just so dear, is to know there's another place. I've been there, but apparently this is a new room they've opened up. And there were like 17 young students, late teens, early 20s, and the audience was quite filled. And in downtown, if you get 50, 75 in proportion to whoever the space, that's good. And to know on any given night, I keep telling all the young people, on any given night in New York, whatever your interest, you have to be selective. And there's so much out there. And it's frustrating. I'm part of the LaMama family. They're doing 70 productions this season. I do not have time. And plus readings. And because of the renovation, is next season they're doing 40 because there isn't space. But all alternative spaces in the old days is, oh, can we do an 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock show next week or so? And someone would say, well, yes. Due to expenses and people must be paid, you have a lighting person someone to take tickets and so forth. And so it's not as easy. I will talk about Howell Gallery on First Street. It's quite an exceptional space. That used to be the LaMama Galleria on First Street between Bowery and Second Avenue. And they've taken over and they've done such a wonderful job. Jane Friedman runs it with a wonderful three-person crew of Ted, Carter, and Liz. And three evenings a week there, they do panels or readings or something. Plus, they're open from 11 to 6. But their presentations is trying to get as many living people from like the Ginsberg era when they plan an exhibit around. It is like, oh, these people are still alive. And the audience that comes, if they're in walkers, in wheelchairs, they will come because this peer group is so diminished, it goes on. A lot of the things, though, are from like the 80s, which is the Pyramid Club, which is a generational bridge, although every day they age, but culturally is what they show the artists, and what they're sharing is the oral history of people who lived in that generation or were peers or friends of these poet, playwrights, dancers, choreographers, lighting designers, puppeteers, costume designers, it's quite remarkable. Now, I had mentioned previous to our taping Penny Arcade, who I met in the early 60s when she was part of Joan Vaccaro's Playhouse of the Ridiculous at the Gotham Theater, I believe, 43rd near 10th Avenue. And that part of town was still difficult. But as a outspoken, intelligent woman, she continued that trajectory until this fabulous show at St. Anne's in Brooklyn. And she had done 150 performances in Europe. She's more appreciated because I think from a perspective, they can see this downtown performance artist from New York addressing current issues, even in the respective country of sexism and so forth and so on, and in Australia. But she speaks her mind, like it or not, she will, and that it was like 2 hours and 40 minute show, and she's there pre-show for like 15-20 minutes, and that intelligence of issues and gentrification and identification and so forth is so remarkable that no one in that sold-out audience walked out. And it was cross-generational, and usually in a lot of provocative therapies, at a certain point, but there's no intermission, so you're caught, and it's very to try to tiptoe away. And so it was very nice to appreciate and see what she's accomplished, because she doesn't perform that much in New York, because they want her so much in Europe.
And as a performer yourself, do you feel that your relationship to your work has changed over time?
Oh, well, I don't think so much as in room. What I do is sort of collective with projects, but I know that she's ignited parts of me and other people is, beside participating in ensemble pieces written by and so forth and so on, is that we all have our own voice, and it sort of behooves us, especially at this point, is having your say, speaking your mind, and like it or not, these are your thoughts and feelings, and say it while you can. And boy, the proliferation in these economic times is that there are a dozen things happening every night. Little venues, or maybe at St. Mark's or some other place, and you read a review in the time, or in something, and you say, oh my God, how do people know these are happening? But of course, me from the last century, the gadgets all have multiple listings of everything happening. And because things have to be scheduled now, as you know in advance, it's like X, Y, or Z is happening next month or in January, and they're advertising things in March and April to alert you. Is that like John Kelly will be doing, is it Hamlet or something at St. Anne? And I thought, oh gee whiz, I ran into him. Well, we did a benefit for the Actors Fund at Dixon Place, Murat Zahn. And
can you describe what you did for that?
Oh, Well, Kevin Maloney of Tweed, who used to do parodies until he got so well-reviewed and known as the states of Edward Albee, Tennessee Williams, and so forth, cease or desist. And that he had to curtail a lot of the activities. But this was a benefit, and it was an abridged Murat Saad. And such wonderful people. A group of all downtown people, including Edgar Oliver, John Kelly, David Cale, Hattie Hathaway, who was part of the Pyramid, and Jackie 60. I see them, they're on each side of me. Julie Atlas Muse, she was never even blah, blah, blah. And Sweetie, Brenda Bergman, Brenda Bergman's daughter. I'm seeing from, I was one of the inmates of the, and I know where I was in my prison, my hospital gown, and I'm seeing, I think there was like 18 of us plus musicians and so forth. And in those kind of questions, I always feel bad I've left out people, but I mean, it was so much fun, and it was sold out, and I understand they made money for the fun.
And is there a particular kind of performance that you love to be part of more than others, or?
Well, I like the whole idea of ensemble, and that almost Judy and Mickey, let's do a show. And concurrently downtown, it's more thought out as the decades and the times. And of course, playwrights really have something they do want to say and messages. But that lighter stuff is sort of evaporated in the time of reality, and various playwrights are addressing various issues through the decades, and it takes a while for it to come to fruition, is finding a booking, finding the cast, the directors, and so forth. It just amazes me how things come together. Fabulous things that are like an exotic flower, a hothouse flower, that lives for 10, 12 performances, and it's gone, except if you were lucky enough to see it, it stays in your heart and memory. Is, you know, what a presentation. All these people gave up their time and energy to do it, and you know they're not going to make a living doing it, because it's such a burst of sharing and ensemble for this gift.
And is it different for you to be involved in theater and to be involved in film? Do they feel different?
Well, after working with Jack Smith, film. There are people when you mention Jack Smith in film. I mean, even people in film school at NYU they don't consider him really a film, because it took him years to do a film because of economics and so forth. And the feeling is, well, you have funds or something, and you buy the film, you plan it, and you shoot it, and it could be your student project for that semester. And what is all this art business? It's you don't know it's going to take that much time, or you're concurrently working, or who is available for some continuity. And it's better shooting outside, and you got to wait for the season and so forth. But I digressed. Is the question was,
if it feels different to be in film or videos as it does as a performer, does it feel different to be in film and from the stage?
Oh, I think the experience and magic alone, because I really am never able to absorb the full intent of any production, and it's such a mystery. It is and an adventure. that it's all very new and exciting, and I never know, like this last show of Stephen Tashin at Howl on October 27th is I really wasn't sure how it would turn out, although Taboo had done spent money on the costumes, and we got together once a week and what have you, but it's all magic to me. It's like rehearsal in a bare loft. To me, is the most magical. You go into a bare room, and you read the script, and then inventory, and you move around, and you're imagining what it would be if you know the place you're performing, and oh, there's going to be lights and costumes. Oh, eventually, you know. But it's all of that, and then what you perceived in that creative process is going to be different when you say, oh, this is the costume, and this lights, and we're in silhouette for this scene. I mean, all of it is just so different and so exciting. It's just like, oh, wow. And downtown, you don't have to be so tight. There can be adjustment with lights, or we're going to cut these lines out, we're putting in this. And that flexibility keeps this alive spontaneity, which I know what a professional, in parentheses, underline, actors say, well, that's why we do Broadway or off-Broadway.
And do you find that there's a difference?
Oh, I love them because they pursue something and they have a certificate. What amazes me when I've met people at Great Jones Street, the La Mama Rehearsal Loft, is sometimes they rent it to small groups and so forth. And there was a wonderful group that did Tom Murin's The Alien Comics play that we did at La Mama in 60... maybe it was late, 1966, before most people are born. And we were curious is whatever possessed this, I don't know the college in Rochester, is that they wanted to come down to Mom and do an interpretation of something that was done way before they were born or their parents were born. And it was an interesting interpretation. I sat with Tom Murin's wife, and they would come and go because I'd sit with my friend who works at La Mama. And the education across America, university, college, or what have you, and I'm told even in high schools, a basic requirement is not only do you have to act, if you don't dance, you do movement, and it helps if you play an instrument or read music. And so I did a little survey of that, and they just said, what? Of course, we're trained. We have a college certificate. And that's when I realized that announced to me across America is that people in the arts and theaters do all that or should have basic knowledge of all that. And I thought, gee whiz, more than triple threats. And they know how to improvise. And I thought, gee whiz, where in the 60s, it was trial and error. And in trial and error, some things work. But you do it in rehearsal. And your peer group isn't necessarily the best audience. And especially if you're rehearsing, whatever, is like, that worked the first time you did it, but will it work? And so with Vaccaro, he keeps pushing you in the development stage, because we've seen that already. Do something different. And it forces you to explore further.
And when you explore, do you think about it through character, as if you're portraying a character, or is it more abstract? Or what's it like to be inside those rehearsals when he's saying, do something different, do more? What does it feel like on the inside?
Oh, because I don't have any training. And a lot of us, a lot of the Playhouse were sort of like misfits. and we ended up in the East Village, is that we weren't trained, but we explored together, and that we didn't use so much of the intellectual capacity. We were just expressing what our resources were through life, through TV, for movies, perhaps as a reference point, but we just did something. And in improvisation, it goes in such a diverse way of current events. And being downtown when the Bowery was the Bowery, it was a transition, is that the realities of, yes, you could get mugged all over the East Village and around the Bowery, and women had to be careful, even if they had to walk in the street. And if you hear footsteps or something, you turned around. And if you saw groups of the corner of your eyes down the street, you zigzagged because you didn't know. And our crowd is pretty passive, but the cheap rents and so forth, this is where we live, and we know, well, there's an instinct which is gone with young people now. I mean, Sex and the City women, any given night in the East Village, and they're going down across Houston, and they never look back, and they have this big, a purse with maybe their cell phones and their credit cards, but they're in a group at least. We were very careful. When you get out of a house, or you're coming from someone's party and you're coming upstairs, yes, you the excitement of who you saw and what have you, but once you hit the top of the stoop, is you scan the street. It's just automatic, even if you're still laughing and talking. You scan the street and decide which route are you going to cross the street immediately, or are you going to go to the little. And the city was not as well lit as it was. And so there's an instinct. And it's very hard to explain to younger people how dangerous, physically dangerous, and you have to be mugged many times, is before that there isn't one consensus of who's going to mug you. And going into Alphabet Land, like the old Reliable, to see a play or be in it, is on your way. I mean, when you're getting ready in the dressing room, he said, "Oh, what happened to your coat?" Well, they wanted it, and they took it. And why are you in your stocking feet? They took my shoes. They're either if they took women's shoes, they were going to sell it or give it to somebody. And it's an everyday, an ordinary experience for all our alternative people, who we wanted to do a show, or what have you, or we're going to rehearsal. And that determination is, that was our intent. And Great Jones Street and Bowery looks, so nice, and they have the Bowery Hotel, and it wasn't there then, and so forth, is that what's nice, it's open at the intersection, and you can see, which side of the street, and to zero in on the red door at Great Jones Street. And it wasn't always the same, because once you were in the door and going up the wooden stairs, because the elevator didn't work in those days, is someone could be on the landing with a knife and just empty your pockets. Didn't stop the I was going to do a rehearsal. Is you said, I was just mugging. He said, he had a 12-inch knife. And so then he said, "Okay, but what scene are we rehearsing tonight?" Is that you zero in on what the project is. And I knew many young women who sort of dressed in boyish, in army fatigues or bulky pea jackets, and so forth. So it looked like it was a male. Peek out and some sort of thing on their head. But some of us, you say, it's really downtown, in the East Village, of the, it's like guerrilla warfare. But if you were determined to go to that over between B and C, or was it between C and D? But in any case, or 8 BC, which was later in the 80s, that was between B and C, is people didn't walk through Tompkins Square Park. They walked on the north side or the south side, and that didn't mean you weren't going to be mugged because it was more lit, and they could see you and just cross from the park side, is that they're not going to be any problem. Sort of safety numbers, some of us would wait at an intersection like on A and see, oh, that group likes, they're going at least to B, so we'll get where St. Bridges is, that's safe, and maybe there might be a little, but 8 BC was a very creative historic place where many of us performed, and people did stay till 3 or 4 or later, and sort of leave, hopefully, together. Well, safety in numbers, at least 2 or 3 people together. But when we worked there, when I worked there with Ethel Eichelberger, we had Matt Baylor and Rita Redd, sort of as stage managers and helper, and we traveled with a cart, and we would put the trunk of costumes, props, and everything, and we'd take it across, and then go down the Bowery to Spring Street, and where she had a storefront right near Elizabeth, and then we deposit that stuff, or even from the pyramid. I mean, we get out 2:33 or something, and then let's go eat, and because your adrenaline is flying, and that it was easier to walk to the West Village. Up from there, through Little Italy and so forth, and find a place to have breakfast.
Wow, and do you feel that among your peer group, there's still that same sense of experimentation in rehearsal? Do you feel, or has it slightly shifted?
I think culturally, that's a very good question. Culturally, the stuff we experience by trial and error and so forth, and with the training of young people is the goals of the playwright, composer, or so forth of the project is already set, and that it crystallizes and sparkles and shines, and your limitation of rehearsal time of maybe 3 weeks or 3 weeks and a half, and it all comes together. The sort of the training period we went through is something that most people won't even tolerate. Why are we sitting here? We're going to rehearse for a couple months on what, and we don't even know exactly what we're you know, you're getting in the mood of something, of a project, and you may not have the script yet, but it's the process of creativity, of, you know, we just want to hear your voice, you know, move around, and you know, just hang out, and we'll get to know. Mm-hmm. But not all of our downtown was as loose as the troops I work with. There were intended goals. There's a script, there's casting, a few readings, and then there's a costumer and what have you. The part I'm talking about sounds so slapdash as how did anyone present anything? But different goals and different people collectively. I mean, Tom O'Horgan's troupe was very experimental, but they did so much work and planted seeds all over Europe. And what the Europeans thought, what the Americans were so free. It wasn't studied. It was so casual. They talk to the fourth wall, and culturally, and your things are precise and done and appreciated. Here, in the 60s from Mamama, it was just, okay, what you see is what you get, and it's so refreshing. Oh, they're not wearing costumes. They're wearing their dungarees or what they wore today, and they're just getting up and doing whatever the playwright's intent was. I was thinking of Paul Foster with Tom Paine, and it's about Tom Paine, but the freedom of speech and so forth. And that, in Europe, it was just like, oh, this is an American hero, and it's about freedom of speech. And it was just so refreshing. It's like, they're talking to you in whatever venue, not a stately theater with a big proscenium arch, but alternative space is like, this is the essence of theater. It's us and the audience, even if there's only three.
Before we end.
Already?
I know, it's so crazy. Time just flies with you.
Well, I babble so much. I'm sorry.
I hope that, I mean, we can do this forever. But for this particular session, before we end, is there something that you're looking forward to doing creatively in the next year? Or?
Oh, yes. As time marches on and friends are getting sick and some are passing on, there's two things. Oh, I'd like to make one statement about the definition of me was, I'm a pre-Stonewall Christopher Street queen who participated and witnessed the birth of our alternative theater downtown and gay liberation. But what was the other question? I'm sorry.
Oh, just about something you're looking forward to doing.
Oh, yes. The show I've been working on for, I'm a closet playwright or something. There are things and words and phrases that go in my head all my life. And I think the title of my piece is, I don't even know how I'm going to do it, is Pre-Stonewall Stories Shared on the Steps of St. Veronica on Christopher Street. I think that's basically the title. And I will tell stories of all the street queens I knew, some who only hung out for a few times, and others seasonally, who all during the spring and summer were there regularly, and so forth. So there's little bits and pieces, and there should be like 12 characters at least. I will not use, I don't use first and last names because a lot of the people, even close friends, we never knew their first name or their persona's name, which is fine.
That sounds incredible.
So I wish everyone luck well, and I hope this contributes in some manner, way, shape, form of how things were. For me, my truth is different from all the other people who are also from downtown or different parts of the theater. Thank you.
Thank you.